Hello and welcome to this episode of Total Health with Dr. Cage. This is a podcast that is intended to help you attain optimal health and optimal longevity. I'm Dr. Arlen Cage, a naturopathic physician and natural health care expert. To learn more about my background, you can read my full bio on my website, www.drcagesays.org. In an earlier episode, I introduced the very, very broad subject of nutrition and food quality and how, in my experience, this is the single most important aspect of health here in modern times. People are sick because in many instances, they are literally eating industrial waste products. We have many modern food-like products on sale in grocery stores and restaurants, which not too many years ago were considered waste products, not fit for human consumption, and they were discarded as trash. Somehow, mysteriously, the FDA was induced to consider some of these again, reconsider them, and many former waste products are now approved as food. Research pink slime, if you want an example. And at some point, I'd like to devote an entire episode or two to the subject of corruption in the food industry and corruption in the medical industry. Those political subjects are, in fact, covered in a lot of other places, other books, podcasts, videos, and so forth. That's not my main emphasis, but I will probably be, I'll probably need to put out an episode on those subjects at some point. My emphasis is on helping you restore and maintain your health, and the best revenge against political corruption is just that. Restore and maintain your health, live long and prosper, as they say. So today I want to talk about the fallacy that if you eat a balanced diet, you get all the nutrients you need. I have a short video on this over on my YouTube channel. This material is different. This I go into a little more detail than I do there. This has been the official formal position of the conventional medical system for more than 100 years now, whenever the subject about the need for vitamin mineral supplementation comes up. Oh no, you get everything you need in a balanced diet. To fully explain the situation that we now have here in the early 21st century, I'm going to go back a few hundred years. The time frame from roughly the 1300s through the 1800s was a period we know in medical history as the infectious disease era. During that time period, the leading cause of death of most human cultures were the diseases we now know to be caused by infectious organisms such as bacteria, viruses, fungi and molds, and other things, maybe protozoans. This time frame includes the most deadly plague in recorded human history, which was known as the Black Plague, also known as the Black Death or the Bubonic Plague, which over a roughly 200-year period, it killed about one-third of the population of Europe, Northern Africa, and the Middle East. Now, eventually, as medical science progressed out of the Dark Ages, knowledge of the microscope finally came into the widespread use, and with proper treatment, especially sanitation, hygiene, pure water sources, proper disposal of human waste and sewage, the infectious diseases began to decline in frequency and severity most places in the world. The knowledge of infecting microorganisms was viewed as one of the great achievements in medical science in those times. There were, however, a few nagging, pesky diseases that simply did not respond to any type of antimicrobial treatments. Researchers were not able to isolate any new organisms that could be considered a possible cause for these mystery diseases. The discussions were held by a few researchers suggesting, well, maybe this has something to do with food, things like rickets or beriberi. Maybe these are caused by food. Scurvy was another one that was considered in this category. And maybe there's something missing from the food, or maybe there's a problem with the food that's causing all this. The notion that food could be the cause of disease was very poorly received by the bulk of doctors and researchers that time, and quite frankly, by most people alive. Eventually, however, as I would call it, sanity prevailed. Evidence was gathering showing that very conclusively withholding certain foods could cause a disease, while giving someone with that disease the same certain food could cure the illness. Over in my Dr. Cade Says Core Nutrition 2, it's about micronutrients. I go through the history of how we discovered vitamin C and that citrus foods would cure or prevent scurvy. James Lind was a British naval doctor who did that research. Fabulous stuff, just absolutely fabulous stuff. Once the medical field began to accept the notion that there were, in fact, specific compounds in foods that we require for health, and if we don't consume enough of them, we could get sick, then the search was on to identify those mystery compounds. Much of the early speculation was that they were amino acids. These compounds were considered vital for life, and so the term vital amino acids, or as it got shortened to vital amines, and now the really short term is vitamins. So very long story, very short, in the fullness of time, all the various vital nutrients essential for life were identified. As predicted, a few were in fact amino acids, and every biochemistry student is required to memorize the list of essential amino acids, whereupon after graduating, we promptly forget them until we need to know them, and then we go look them up. Most of the vital amines, however, turned out to be something else. A few were actually lipids in the fat family. Many, however, had a unique chemical structure, and they couldn't really be placed in any of the three categories of macronutrients, being proteins, fats, and carbohydrates. These are the ones that today we still call vitamins. Others turned out to be individual minerals. These are individual atomic elements, things like calcium, magnesium, zinc, iron, iodine. Collectively now, all these various substances have been determined to be essential for life that we must get in the food because our body does not have the capacity to make them out of other raw materials, have all come to be known and categorized as essential nutrients. The early decades of the 20th century, about 100 years ago now, saw volumes of research done to firmly establish the list of essential nutrients, which is about 77 different compounds. In addition to research showing that these nutrients must be consumed because we can't make them, other research was conducted showing the optimal dosage range for adults and children. Other research was conducted showing how much of each nutrient is to be found in all the various types of foods that we typically eat. So where I'm going with this is that the science of essential nutrients is very well established over the last 100 years or so. All these nutrients, which are essential for our grandparents and great-grandparents, are still essential for us today. The human genome still requires these same essential nutrients. I'll have a little more to say about how much of these we need later on in this podcast. So for now, back to the question of, do you really need to be taking nutritional supplements, or is the propaganda that it'll all they do is give you expensive urine through? It's like, let's look at that. There was a time up until roughly 100 years ago when literally all the food available, whether you grew it yourself or bought it in stores, or you bought it directly from the farmers, all of it was organically grown. Now, the modern definition of organic is that it's food that is grown without artificial chemical fertilizers, bug killers, weed killers, herbicides, fungicides. None of that existed. 100 years ago, all the food was organic. Well, what happened, you might be wondering? Well, what happened was the Dust Bowl. The Dust Bowl is not a football game that was played before athletic fields had grass or artificial turf. The Dust Bowl was a period of time in the late 1920s and 1930s when a very severe extreme drought hit most of the North American continent. Little or no rain fell for the better part of 10 years. Scientists tell us that based on geological records, this type of drought occurs about every 200 years or so in North America, and that drought from the late 20s and 30s, almost 100 years ago now, that was it. That was the 200-year drought. And what was especially crucial in that 20th century drought, however, is that it came on the heels of a vast westward expansion of our country where farming practices that were not compatible with most of the fertile farmlands of this country were adopted. That means that when the drought hit, there was no longer any root mass to hold the soil in place and it blew away. It's been documented that chemical analysis showed that topsoil, dirt that was blowing into Washington, D.C. and accumulating on the steps of the Capitol came from the Great Plains states. Most of that fertile farm soil that had been sitting there providing life for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ended up on the bottoms of the oceans. Well, as happens, the wheel of time turned, the rains came back, and what farmers began to find, however, is that crops weren't growing well or at all in these nutrient-deficient soils. A study was conducted that was documented in United States Senate document number 264, published in 1936, which concluded that American farming soils were depleted of nutrients, primarily minerals, and that foods grown on them were incapable of sustaining healthy human life. Now, that was more than 85 years ago, and the situation has only gotten worse ever since. Crops not growing, especially after 10-year-long drought and the economic depression that that caused, was a major concern, to say the least. So scientists were asked to come up with solutions. The first level of solution was the production of chemical fertilizers. They learned that nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium were the three magic nutrients that would make plants grow big. The chemical abbreviations for those are NPK, and the NPK levels are available on every fertilizer container you can find down at the garden store. Every different type of plant, it turns out, needed these nutrients in slightly different ratios. Now, those were the nutrients that may have made the plants grow large. It did not necessarily make the plants grow healthier, and it did not provide all the nutrients that we humans need when either we eat the plants directly or we eat the other animals that eat the plants. The plants weren't able to defend themselves against diseases, you know, molds and bugs that want to eat them, because they were lacking the nutrients for their own protective immune systems. The presence of all the toxins that came about as a result of this situation is causing a lot of the ill health effects we have. And why did that happen? Because they started using chemical fertilizers, bug killers, weed killers, mold killers, and on and on and on down the list. These are still today, almost 100 years later, one of the biggest sources of environmental toxins we face and one of the biggest problems of ill health that we face. So, the main take-home part of this information as far as answering our question, do you really need supplements, is concerned, is that since the 1930s, our food supply in the United States is nutrient deficient. This, in fact, is what caused that Senate document 264, to be generated, hopefully in an attempt to bring attention to this crucial issue and fix the problem. Unfortunately, influence of industry and lawmakers in this country was well underway in the 1930s, a situation which is still continuing to this very day. And rather than remineralizing the farm soils as a systematic policy, we have adopted the toxic fertilizer, bug killer, weed killer cycle, which is easier in the short term and just so happens to make a lot of money for certain chemical industries. It leaves our foods nutrient deficient, and We are killing ourselves slowly or quickly with these toxic chemicals, many of which get absorbed into the plants and simply can't be washed off. So here we are almost 100 years later, and we have a situation where our food has fewer nutrients than the same food did in the early 20th century when they were initially measured. Furthermore, our need for nutrients has gone up significantly in order for our body's detoxification systems to be able to clear out all those environmental toxins we're being exposed to regularly in our air, in our water or food, in body care products, and just about everywhere you look. This is the key situation answers our question. We have far fewer nutrients available in our food than our ancestors did, and we have far greater need for nutrients than our ancestors did. That results in what is known as the nutrient gap. This is a new gap between the nutrients available in our food and the nutrients we require to be healthy. And if we attempt to rely on the nutrients only of what's available in the food we eat, then even a well-balanced diet, even one made from organic foods, simply does not supply everything we require for health. In fact, it is impossible for the food to supply. Even if we remineralize our farming soils, grow all our foods organically, and within a short time, we can start producing foods whose nutrient content matches the studies done 100 years ago or so, we would still be nutrient deficient because of that widespread presence of environmental toxins, which means we need far higher level of nutrients than we did 100 years ago. Perfect food would only close the nutrient gap about halfway. So it becomes my duty to tell you that the vast majority of medical doctors are wrong about this subject. They simply aren't trained adequately in nutrition to know this information, and sadly, most don't do any reading about nutrition on their own when they get out of medical school. The average medical doctor receives only 1 to 4 hours of instruction in nutrition during their 4 years of medical training. The average naturopathic physician, meanwhile, receives more than 400 hours of nutritional training. That means your average naturopathic physician puts their time and effort into keeping you healthy and, when necessary, even curing diseases using food as the first line therapy. So what are medical doctors trained in? You probably know the answer. Pharmaceuticals, drugs. What is their first line of treatment for any condition? Drugs, drugs, and more drugs. So yes, you do need nutritional supplements. At the same time, you need high-quality, healthy food, as I discuss in some of my earlier podcasts and over in my videos in the Core Health section of my website and on my YouTube channel. Junk food and a multivitamin supplement will not keep you healthy. I hope the next logical question you're already asking is, how much of each essential nutrient do I actually need? This has been a question only since the Dust Bowl. Before that, in what was our relatively clean, toxin-free world compared to today, with real nutrient-dense organic food as our only source of sustenance, our ancestors didn't even worry about this question. Now, however, we have to. The U.S. federal government has released a list for each nutrient with what they claim is the amount an average adult is supposed to get of every vitamin, mineral, and other essential nutrient. The numbers are referred to as the RDA, or the Recommended Daily Allowance. Historically, however, this isn't what the number was called. Back in the 1960s, when I was growing up, this same number was the minimum daily requirement. The language right on food packaging clearly stated that this was the minimum amount we should all get, and that because of unique individual differences, some people might need more. Then at some point in time, however, there was a shift in language from MDR, or minimum daily requirement, to minimum daily allowance. It carried a subtle shift in language and a subtle message that this is all you were allowed to have. Now, eventually, the MDA, minimum daily allowance, morphed into the RDA, the recommended daily allowance. And the language describing that measure is that that's the maximum amount of nutrient that you should be getting. Now, historically, the MDA acknowledged that biochemical individuality and differences, so that you might need that much or more. The RDA is really being used as a threat to tell you it might be unsafe to get any more than the RDA amounts. So, if this was all there were to say about the RDA, it would still be a pretty messed up mess. Unfortunately, it isn't. There's more you really need to know in this world of taking responsibility for your own health and that of your family, especially with respect to just what is it you're putting in your mouth. The astute among you may be asking the next logical question, logical to me anyway, which is, where did the numbers and the RDA values come from? It turns out these numbers come from testing of animals. That's right. RDA values are based on feeding animals a diet and slowly reducing the amount of nutrient in their food step by step until the animal died of a nutrient deficiency. The last dosage at the last step just before the animal died was then picked as the RDA value and scaled up in terms of milligrams of nutrient to kilograms of body weight for the average human, usually about 150 pounds. And this is then the RDA values we have today. Now, what's been ignored in this supposedly scientific method of determining the RDA levels is the fact that while the animal might not have died yet, it might very well have been sick. And as nutrient levels drop, all animals will begin to suffer from less than optimal health until the real illness sets in. Another curious factoid about the use of animals as test subjects for how much of a nutrient a human is supposed to have is that the RDA for each nutrient was performed using different animals. See, not every nutrient and every animal is it considered essential. You know, guinea pigs, for instance, make their own vitamin C. We can't do vitamin C withholding tests on guinea pigs, so we had to use some other animal. So collectively as a group, there is absolutely no correlation between the RDA levels of the essential nutrients and anything whatsoever to do with human physiology. Now, fortunately, in the world of nutrition and natural holistic medicine, another batch of research has been carried out, and we now have available what are referred to as optimal levels for each nutrient. In addition, we have therapeutic levels for each nutrient. Optimal levels are defined as the amount of nutrient a human should be getting for their optimal health. These numbers can be found in a variety of nutrition books, such as the ones I reference in my book, Heal Your Life, Heal the World. So if you go to, I think it's chapter 2 on physical health in Heal Your Life, Heal the World, each chapter has a list of references and you will see the major nutrition books that I recommend that that have these optimal nutrient levels. Furthermore, what's very helpful is optimum levels are usually defined as a range, so the amount can be customized for each individual's need based on things such as body weight, overall health, and so on. Now, the therapeutic ranges are usually a lot higher. These are defined as the upper limit of dosage, which might be needed in the short term to help with overall treatment of an illness. Some nutrients do actually have upper limits based on safety, especially in the realm of the fat-soluble vitamins. So when you obtain your higher quality nutrition book and start using the optimum ranges or therapeutic ranges of nutrients, you should really pay attention to those upper limits. This is probably enough for today on the subject of micronutrients and why, yes, you really do need to be taking nutritional supplements on top of eating those high quality foods with high quality ingredients. Remember from my earlier podcast, everything in my book, Heal Your Life, Heal the World, was based on what I saw actually work in clinical practice to get complicated people who were very sick to get them well, often quickly and very often without actually treating their diseases. First on the list of thousands of patients I saw over the years, the main thing was nutrition And the two components of nutrition are number one, food quality, and number two, supplementing the essential nutrients. That was almost always where I started, because people who live a life dedicated to the proposition of eating high quality, nutrient dense foods just don't end up in doctor's offices very often needing to be treated for the long-term chronic illnesses. So no matter where you are in your life, young, old, anything between, what your current health status may be, I suspect there is something about the way you eat that can, in fact, be improved. Start with food, and to make it easy, start with my book, Heal Your Life, Heal the World. It's available on all the major online booksellers. You can read about it on my website, www.drcagesays.org, and I have a link to go click over and purchase it. To help you along in the aspect of healthy eating, I have a 5-page handout defining quality nutrition, which I am more than happy to send you free of charge. Just go to my website, click on the handouts link, fill out the form with your name and email addresses, and we will email you back my 5-page nutritional handout. As I mentioned earlier, I have a YouTube channel with short nutrient-dense videos, as well as an online health committee. Links and descriptions are available on my website. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you get something out of this podcast today. Please subscribe so you get all the updates, get notified of my next episode, and I hope you tune in to my future podcasts. So for today, this is Dr. Cage saying good health.